Kia ora and welcome. I'm Helen King, and you're listening to The C Word. If this is your first time, welcome. Thanks for joining us. This is a show where we talk about life after a cancer diagnosis. Usually I have my lovely co-host Belinda Tran Lawrence with me, but she's deep in the wilderness of the South Island having a well-deserved holiday with her family, and I'm hoping she'll be back in range next week. So to keep me company, I have three guests joining me, and we're going to be talking about bums. Because in New Zealand, our shyness about talking about our rears is killing us. We're talking about a disease which claims the title of the second highest cause of cancer death in New Zealand, and we have one of the worst rates in the world. Every year, over 3,000 people are diagnosed with bowel cancer, and more than 1,200 will die from the disease. It's estimated one in every 18 New Zealanders will develop bowel cancer in their lifetime. Last month was Bowel Cancer New Zealand's awareness campaign, so we've kind of missed the boat on that. However, as anyone who has had cancer will know, every month is a cancer awareness month. So I kind of think it's just important to keep that conversation going beyond our awareness months. Over the next hour, we're going to be talking to three people who have either been impacted by bowel cancer or work within the cancer community. Let's get on with the show and introduce our first guest. Out of the estimated 3,000 people who will be diagnosed with bowel cancer a year, at least 300 of them will be under the age of 50. Martinborough local Stephen Corbett was 46 when he was diagnosed. Fit and healthy at the time, he wasn't too worried when he found blood in his stool. After being urged to see the GP by his wife, it took a further two visits to different GPs for the suggestion of a colonoscopy to come up. His symptoms weren't deemed serious enough to qualify for a publicly funded procedure, so he paid $3,000 to have it done privately. And that's when the tumour was found. After surgery and chemotherapy, he tried to regain a sense of normalcy. But like many of us find, the road to recovery is not always simple. I chatted with Stefan about his experience and how things are 5 years after his diagnosis with stage 3 bowel cancer.
I've recently had to have another operation 3.5 years after the bowel cancer.
Yes.
Because it had spread eventually from my bowel up into my lung.
Mm.
And this is, you know, probably because it just wasn't caught early enough.
Mm.
And the cancer's had an opportunity to spread, and that means more surgery for me, more risk,
yes.
more stress, you know, is it going to come back again,
and yeah.
am I actually clear, when am I ever going to be rid of this bloody thing, you know,
yeah.
that kind of thing, and very serious effects that people are dealing with, right from the most serious, which is losing your life, but mm. also down into more surgery, more mental health concerns for people, and we really need to get on top of it.
I just want to touch on that because I've been sitting here sort of nodding along as you've been talking, because I'm 2 years out from my diagnosis, and I'm due for the way they sort of monitor me is I have a yearly mammogram, and that's coming up for me, and I feel like, I mean, the whole process of being diagnosed with cancer and going through treatment was severely stressful and almost traumatizing. And it's that sort of scramble back up to the top of the hill afterwards to try and regain your life back, the normalcy. You know, to me, that has been one of the biggest challenges. And you're right, it's that constant sort of little thing of, is it coming back? It's this sort of constant sort of thing underlying that I don't think people realise that that's actually the reality of cancer.
Yeah, we actually sort of going in and getting the surgery done and recovering from the surgery is one thing, you know, and with bowel cancer it's complicated because they take the piece of your bowel out that has the cancer in it, and then while that's healing up, they put a bag on your stomach, like a colostomy bag, but it's temporary. And that's very hard to handle, you know, you're walking around with a bag on your, with a piece of your stomach sticking out into a bag. And you have to go to work, and you have to have relationships, and you have to, you know, deal with all of that. You know, it's quite yucky. Yes. I found it quite yucky, but you know, you get through that, and then you go and get joined back up again, and then you go out into the world, and you know, you're just sort of supposed to get on with it.
Yeah.
And there's this concept of new normal, you know, and I remember being told when I was leaving the hospital, look, you'll be fine, you know, you might just go to the toilet a few more times than normal, but you'll be right, you know, and it couldn't have been further from the truth.
Yes.
I mean, I developed hernias around the sites where they had done the surgery, and I have to wear a brace to keep, you know, all of that sort of comfortable. I lived with sort of, you know, this fear and anxiety around the cancer coming back. Do that, and I'm on, you know, a drug regime, not too bad, but like codeine and a nerve drug, you know, to sort of manage the new bowel process that I've got. And I do have quite a lot of pain and discomfort. And I must say, it's affected me. It's affected the way I work, the way I live in terms of sport, and it's affected my my relationships. You know, it is a big thing that people have to deal with, and yet you're not really prepared for that in any way when you leave. And so that's, you know, that's why I got involved with Bowel Cancer New Zealand, because in that organisation there was a group of people who were supportive. They'd been through that themselves. They were non-judgmental. You could talk openly about all the terribly, you know, gruesome stuff that we all go through. And there was medical advice and support there. And also you could fundraise and get involved in campaigns, and you felt like you were in control of it yourself. It wasn't happening to you.
Yes.
You were actually in control of it, and I think that's what people want. They just want good information, and they want to feel in control of their lives.
It's so true, and I really relate to it. I think it's funny because we've obviously had different cancers, and I think there are, you know, really unique experiences that go with particular cancers. But all of that stuff about, and I think I've mentioned it before on our first episode, where in my final oncologist meeting, he said, and I was like, well now what? And he's like, well, we encourage you to go on and just get on with your life. And thinking, what does that even mean? I struggled through that first year, and you know, mentally it was really, really challenging. You know, for me there was the fatigue. It was that I was on Herceptin for a year, so there was still every 3 weeks of going to the hospital and having you know, an infusion and the side effects from that. And and then my body really broke down as well. And I had to have two extra surgeries to repair things from chemo side effects. And it just felt...
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had really intense, a very intense chemo regime. And my there was just not one part of my body after that that wasn't impacted. And I just, I think after that, and it's, I think, you know, I'm kind of slowly figuring out what normal is, but it just changes the way you relate to every element of your life.
Yeah, and you know, we had different cancer, but cancer is cancer, you know. I mean, I had chemo. I had a really nasty plutonium-based drug that that gives you neuropathy, you know, nerve damage. And I still, if I put my hands under cold water some days, it feels boiling hot, you know, and I sort of... Or I was starting to get permanent nerve damage in my fingertips and... In my toes and stuff, and I had to stop because the chemo was just too strong. And but it still it affects me now, but not so bad. But but people don't realise that the chemo regime has its own its own set of things, you know, to itself in the way that it affects your body. And also like you, I had a, you know, when they this is you open yourself up to surgery and you never really know what's going to happen. And I had a, you know, I described how you have a bag. And then after your bowel's healed, they put you back together again. And they basically just join the bowel up and take the bag off and you're supposed to be all good. But unfortunately, when they rejoined me, they didn't join it up properly. And the contents of my bowel was leaking into my stomach for a few days before they realised. And then once they realised, I had a massive general infection, which was very, very serious. And I got sort of rushed into acute surgery again. And I never forget, you know, waking up from that surgery. Everything had happened so quickly, you know, and I woke up in the intensive care unit and was hooked up to all these machines for food and water and bowels and drugs and everything. And they hadn't been able to close my stomach, so my stomach was still open and there was this vacuum in my stomach still vacuuming up all the... you know, infection and stuff. And I sort of woke up in the ICU and it was like being in some sort of nightmare, you know. And my wife was there and she looked so, you know, and, geez, you know, even talking to you about it now, I'm shaking. I'm literally shaking because it was one of the most horrendous moments of my life, you know. And that wasn't... curing the cancer, do you know what I mean?
No.
That was just a very unfortunate surgical event that led me into a bloody awful situation. So I hear you, Helen. Yeah. I really do. And the it's not just the cancer, it's the results of the surgery, it's the results of the chemo. And so that's why I say, you know, the implications of this, if I could have just caught it earlier and GP 6 months, 8 months earlier, I don't know, maybe I would have been spared that.
Yeah.
And that's what we've got to think about in relation to customer care and responsiveness, you know, on this stuff.
Yeah, I'm still kind of back in what you're telling me because, I mean... That is not what you expect when you go in for a standard procedure. And I imagine that part of it was highly traumatizing because like all of those things to wake up to is really full on. And I think it's that those little things that were, well, not little, but those moments where it's so overwhelming and frightening, because you realize that you are not in control of what's going on, and that's really, really challenging.
Yeah, that's right. And I got involved in an international piece of research recently where, and I think the world is starting to wake up to the fact that we need to put some meaning, real meaning, around what means. It's not okay to just pump people out into the community and say, find your own new normal, you know.
No.
You'll be okay. And I got involved in a piece of research that sought to put some, you know, some clarity around that.
Mm.
And globally, this is something that people are really dealing with, and realizing that it is affecting people's work.
Mm.
People are having to change jobs because,
yes,
they just can't do the same. You mentioned fatigue, and
mm,
there's other physical sort of symptoms and experience that people have that might not be able to work. If they're young people, if they're a young person, it might be very serious in terms of their relationships, their sexual relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it has a cost. You know, a lot of people dealing with an economic dimension to this, but
yeah,
you know, if it isn't recognised properly by government, by social welfare, or by accident compensation regimes, then people might not be able to get the right financial support that they need. And there's a whole range of social, you know, economic, physical health, and mental factors here that are at play,
mm,
and they're all combined, and no one really is getting to grips with it and offering people the support they need.
They're really not. And that's one of the reasons why I really, you know, when I sort of started thinking about how to sort of contribute to that, because I really feel that sharing our stories is one way that we can do it. And so,
yeah,
you know, having that, those open and honest conversations, because that is one of the turning points for me in, you know, starting to sort of, I guess, heal emotionally, was last year I went to a cancer retreat, and it was actually quite random that I even saw that it was on. And it was, they were Canadian specialists, and one was a radiation oncologist, his wife was a psychologist, and there was a chaplain who has a very rare type of cancer that keeps coming back. And so his experience is sort of being, you know, dealing with that threat of reoccurrence. And the thing for me was that I walked into that weekend feeling so defeated and tired and emotional. And it was like this amazing revelation of talking to other, predominantly women at my one, who had been through all the same things, who understood that fear. You
I'm
know,
not alone.
I'm not alone. And it's so, because you don't want other people to be, you know, suffering. But there is a sort of,
no,
like, oh, thank God.
I have the utmost respect for you doing that and setting up your organisation in response to that need. And because, and everyone's different, right? You know, like I don't know. I mean, a 46-year-old bloke like me might not go to a cancer retreat. Or,
yeah.
You know, or maybe they would. I don't know. Maybe what I found was, I didn't want to bother, even though I'm in a fantastic relationship with my wife, I didn't want to, you know, there's some things that you just don't want to burden,
yes,
your partner with it all the time. You know, they've already dealt with having to look after you and look after the family and look after the finances and everything while you're going through all of your treatment and, you know, My wife was an absolute trooper in the way that she did that, but it took its toll on her as well. And then, so then when you get out, the last thing you want to do is, like, you know, burden your partner with it. And I joined this Facebook group, which Bowel Cancer New Zealand support. And I started talking to people about all these things that were happening to me. And is anyone else doing this? And you get these responses from sort of, 50 people.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly the same thing happened to me, and this is what I did, and this is something that might help, and if you want to reach out and have a chat, just ring me. And maybe it was a very similar feeling to you at that retreat. I just felt as if, oh, my God, I'm not on my own anymore, and I'm not, this isn't something I need to really worry about as much as I was worrying about, and there are some solutions for me potentially and some support for me, and what a difference it makes,
Hugely different. Yeah. Having somewhere you can go on and say, look, I'm just feeling scared and a bit paranoid, and no one's going to go, oh, don't be stupid. They go, it's okay, I understand that, but go and get it checked out, and then you have, there's just that sort of understanding.
I think you're right, and as I say, people have different needs, and it might be that you just need to get some advice about your skin chafing around a bag that's on your belly, and someone's going to say, "Hey, try this, try this cream that I got from the pharmacy," and that might be just a piece of information that someone gives you in 30 seconds.
Yes.
But it so saves you, nights of not able to sleep and pain and scarring later on and discomfort. Or it might be right up to someone having just completely not dealing with what's happening to them and it having very serious mental health ramifications for them.
Yes.
And so we need to, as a country, I think, do better in terms of offering that support. And I don't mean that in any critical way for the work that charities and cancer support organisations are acting in New Zealand at the moment, because they're all doing fantastic work. And they need to be supported fully and applauded for what they're doing. But I just feel like there's more we can do, and so we just need to, do more of this, I think, talk about options and get things out there for people to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, it's been great chatting to you today, and thank you so much for being so open and honest about your story. And I think you're right, it's the more we have these conversations, I think the more we open it up for other people.
Yeah, no, look, thank you, Helen. It's been great talking, and good luck.
Thank you so much. Our next guest is at the forefront of bowel cancer treatment in New Zealand. Alistair Patrick heads the McMurray unit here in Auckland and works in the country's busiest hospital, Middlemore, in South Auckland. With the largest Pacifica population calling Tamaki Makaurau home, he sees the devastation bowel cancer is having within the community. I caught up with him earlier in the week, and I started by asking him why the numbers are so bad.
The 5-year risk of death from bowel cancer in New Zealand is highest in Pacific patients, followed by Maori. And the rates, which there's a study called the Piper Project, which was looking at survival from colorectal cancer across New Zealand. And the risk of death for a Pacific Islander was 59% versus 38% for a non-Maori, non-Pacific person in New Zealand. So that's a huge discrepancy. And it is mostly because they present at a later stage. They present to the emergency department with sort of end-stage symptoms as opposed to earlier.
Wow. And because, you're based at Middlemore for some of your work, the South Auckland has one of our highest, it's one of our big Pacifica communities. So I imagine that you see a lot of Pacifica patients. Is that your experience as well, that you're seeing them later?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. Yep.
Yeah. And I know that it can be cultural things, it can be stigma. I know that, you know, no one really likes talking about their bum or, you know, what's going on.
No.
You know, it's not something that people often are willing to sort of divulge or want to get checked out. Is that, I mean, what do you think, how do you think we can shift that?
Yeah, I think that it's just has to be a gradual change in culture. And I think historically, you're right, no one really wants to talk about it of any ethnicity.
No.
But specifically in the Pacific community, that is something that is a very embarrassing topic for people to bring up.
Yes.
And there's various taboos and things around talking about your bowel motions and things, which, you know, I totally appreciate, you know, as a cultural context.
Mm.
But the reality is that that is unfortunately leading to these late diagnoses.
Yes.
And so I think that the communities, including a European community like I'm in, we just have to start talking about it as a family and as an extended whānau, and something that is not embarrassing, something that we all do. We all go to the loo.
Mm.
And if you notice symptoms such as bleeding or your bowel habit is changing, you know, or you have abdominal pain or weight loss, then ignoring it is not the way to go.
Yeah.
Talking about it with someone who you trust, who, you know, who's looking out for you, and then getting yourself checked is much better than what we're seeing now, which is people who are dying from this cancer who could be saved.
Because it is very treatable, isn't it, bowel cancer, when you catch it early?
Yeah, it is. So the survival of someone who is diagnosed early is nearly 100%.
Wow.
The survival of someone who's diagnosed late is nearly 0%.
Wow.
And so, you know, there's a group in the middle, obviously, but the earlier you get people and diagnose them and treat them,
yes,
the much more likely they are to recover and actually be completely cured of bowel cancer.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I was thinking, because I remember for me the first consultation with my oncologist, and I mean, they ask you everything about how your body functions, and it is really, sort of, oh God, you know, this person now knows more about my body than I think anyone else. But yes. I think for me, as someone who's gone through that treatment, and in some ways I, you know, I know it's a different cancer, but we did catch it reasonably early, and you know, knowing that that outcome could have been very, very different had I not acted on it. And sort of, yeah, you kind of have to sort of push past that shyness or embarrassment.
You do. And I think, you know, with this COVID crisis we've had this year, unfortunately, we are seeing more late diagnoses.
Yes.
Because people have been afraid to come forward. And so it does just show you the difference it makes if people delay. You know, if you're worried at all, if you've got any of those symptoms I've mentioned, you need to talk to your GP and get someone to look into it a bit more, if that's the case.
I do want to get quite specific about these symptoms, even though I know people don't like talking about these things. But I think I realised when I was speaking to one of our guests about the symptoms that he had experienced, and he talked about, you know, blood in the stool and that it had been picked up and they thought maybe it was just a tear. And I don't know where I sort of found this idea or sort of adapted it, but that if it's bright red blood, it's not generally something to worry about. It's more the tarry looking. But is that not true? Is it any blood you should get checked out?
Yeah, I think any blood you should get checked out, because I think, I mean, not many people are studying things that closely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you see blood, if you see a tarry darker,
yes,
you know, purple type blood or even a black colour,
yes,
that's bleeding from somewhere in your bowel.
Wow, yeah.
And bright red blood may be coming from a hemorrhoid.
Yes.
And if that's the case, fantastic. So a hemorrhoid is a small vein at the bottom end which is benign and can bleed. You can see a little bit of blood on the toilet paper or in the toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think if you see any blood at all, you should be talking to your doctor. Someone should examine you and make sure that it's not a cancer, because you can get cancer very low down, which could present, you know, with bright red blood, and it would look exactly the same as blood that might come from a hemorrhoid.
Wow, yeah, that's good to know. I mean, that's I'd been thinking all that time, oh, it's a different type of blood to look for. And I have to say, as someone who has had a colonoscopy, they are not actually that bad. I mean, the preparation is actually worse than the procedure itself. You know, and I was thinking actually what you were talking about before in terms of how COVID has impacted, people seeking help. Is it? I mean, are we behind in our screening? Is this,
So we haven't touched on the national screening program yet, which I think is another important thing to talk about.
Yes,
the national screening program was put on pause for a period of time during the lockdown, which mm-hmm. was obviously appropriate. The numbers of colonoscopies done around the country was very small for that period of time because we were just doing the really urgent work.
Mm.
And so we do have a backlog at the moment that the DHBs are all looking at ways to get through. But that's not an easy prospect because the waiting lists were already pretty long before that.
Mm.
And we've now had an extra group of patients that have been put off because of the COVID crisis. And so that's going to mean a busy year for us this year to get back on top of that. But, you know, the DHBs that I work with, particularly counties, are addressing that appropriately, and I think that number will come back under control again. But it is going to take a few months, if not through to the end of the year, before we're really on top of it again.
Now, the National Screening Program has been quite an important, I guess, addition to how we, tackle bowel cancer, because I know for women, you know, we've had, a smear test regularly, or we have already had screening program for mammograms. Has this been quite a big change for screening for bowel cancer to actually have this program in place?
Yeah, absolutely it has. It's still being rolled out around the country, so not each hospital has it yet.
Mm.
But prior to this, the screening was very ad hoc and was not very comprehensive. And obviously we need to address this as a whole society.
Mm.
And so having screening is a huge step forward for managing this problem in New Zealand. And so if you screen the population and pick up early cancers, you will save lots of lives. And that's what we're seeing already.
Mm.
At Middlemore, we've found over 100 cancers in the first 18 months of our program. And these are mostly patients who have an early cancer and can be cured, whereas if they hadn't had screening, unfortunately, who knows what would have happened to them. And so it's a really vital, vital thing that New Zealand are doing.
Mm.
And going back to the Pacific Island and Maori communities that we talked about earlier, it's very important that they get involved. And the participation rates that we see in those communities are low relative to other communities. And again, this is something that unfortunately will lead to a further divide in the outcome.
Mm.
Because if they're not being screened and other people are being screened, their outcome is overall going to be relatively worse. And so it's a key thing that the Pacific Island community particularly getting involved in this program. The program's very straightforward. It involves doing a bowel motion test and checking for some blood, which sounds pretty awful, but it's actually a very straightforward, easy test to do. That's sent off. If there's blood in the bowel motion, then you need more tests. If not, then you get another screening test 2 years after that.
Mm.
And it's all free.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to sort of mention of the ease of it, and to kind of, I think one of the things sometimes is that embarrassment or shame, but I kind of put in, for me, I sort of think, well, the person in the lab, it's their job, and they're dealing with it every day, and we can't let our embarrassment or shame kill us.
That's right, exactly right.
Yeah,
and so it's essential that all of us get involved in this program, and particularly the ethnic groups we've been talking about.
Yes, and just to finish on, what are the top takeaways people should be having today about, I guess, how we approach bowel cancer, or how we, can hopefully avoid it or minimise our risk.
Yeah, I think number one, if you're between 60 and 74, then you should participate in the screening program when you're invited. I think that's the most important thing. I think number two is, no matter what age you are, you're not immune from cancer. And if you experience symptoms, you need to go and talk to someone about those symptoms. And I think the third thing is we need to start talking about it with our whānau.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, trying to break down those taboos and those embarrassments that people have regarding discussing these sorts of things. And I think if we do that, then we will find that it becomes more accepted. People get tested. And I think these rates of bowel cancer, which we're all ashamed of in this country, will start to improve.
That's a really good point. Hey, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem at all. My pleasure.
For our Māori and Pacifica communities, rates of survival are much worse than other groups. Hamiltonian Rachel Afiaki Taumoipiao knows this all too well after bowel cancer appeared in the family twice. 7 years ago, her mother Edith Mary Afiaki was diagnosed with bowel cancer, dying just 6 months later. Then in 2018, her father Patrick Laloma Afiaki was diagnosed. This time it was caught early and the outcome has been far more positive. She joined the Bowel Cancer New Zealand Board to provide a Pacific voice. Mālo, Rachel, welcome to the show.
Mālo lele, warm Pacific greetings.
I think what really struck me about your experience with bowel cancer in your family that, you know, you've had two parents that have been impacted by it now, and that prior to that, there was no family history, no sort of indications that it was something that should have been on your radar. And I know from reading a little bit about your, you know, when your mum was diagnosed, that, you know, she was in her 60s and quite a healthy, active woman. So I imagine it must have sort of come as quite a shock that that's what was going on.
Yes, it was an absolute shock. I think more so for our family who were very much engaged with our Pacifica community. My mother worked for a primary health organisation that delivered health services, community services to the Pacific community. So therefore she was very much had access to medical services. And I think it was just more just not knowing or recognising the symptoms associated with bowel cancer. And because it's such a hidden you know, the symptoms are hidden, you don't know, and then you sort of pass it off as, you know, just another illness or overworking. So it was a huge shock. I mean, what was even more shocking was that when it was discovered that my mother had been diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer, which had already spread to the liver, was that it was too late.
Yes.
So and so that was very much a big shock to our family, because like you said earlier, my mother was incredibly healthy, had no other medical issues
and I as you were talking there, I think women tend to keep going. We kind of, you know, we are raising families or working or, you know, have lots of balls in the air that we're juggling, and so we tend to put that sort of, you know, looking after ourselves to one side. So with your mum, I mean, were there any symptoms that she had been experiencing but had just sort of pushed them to a side?
With my mother, I believe it was the case. I mean, my mother, Edith, the late Edith, Kuswafiaki, she was a very hard-working woman, and like many of our Pacifica mothers, they do tend to be very resilient to addressing the cold or being tired, because they just get on and continue to look after their families or do their work. I would probably also put it down to, at the time, my parents, it was they were sort of in an empty nest being situation at home, so it was only my father and my mother at home. Both my brother and sister and I had already left home. And so I guess it was just them too. So whether it would have made a difference if someone else was in the house to sort of pick up the symptoms of her being tired or not well. And so I put it down to that she was very much someone who just worked very hard. But, you know, I'm going to be honest. I think she did go to the doctors. She did go to the doctors quite regularly, and she had the standard blood tests.
Right.
Because she did realise she wasn't feeling well, so therefore I'll go to the doctors. And so, of course, because she did not have on record any historic indication that she could potentially have bowel cancer or any illness, the medical advice was that, it couldn't be bowel cancer. Mm. There couldn't be anything wrong with her within those areas.
Yes.
So she did go to the doctors. She did have checkups. She did have blood tests. And she probably did so for a whole year. And it wasn't until December of 2012 that a blood test did return, indicating that something was probably, had been highlighted in regards to her bloods in her liver. So that was probably, a good 10 to 12 months later. So I think that's probably something that sort of we don't forget about, is that you can go to the doctors, you can have a blood test. Blood tests will come back and tell you there's nothing wrong there. But actually, there's a need for our Pacifica communities, particularly our elderly, to go further and to ask more questions. Because if you know your body and you know your physical well-being hasn't been right for a while, then you need to ask more questions.
I agree with what you're saying, that if there's something that isn't right, how do we sort of empower each other to really, question that at the doctors? Because I think my normal GP was the third person I saw, and it was finally then where it was like, yep, this is, you have breast cancer. And I just think, for me, I know how to sort of advocate for myself, but if you don't know how to do that, then what are the outcomes going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. What I've somewhat been saying and encouraging, particularly my generation, the children of our parents, who for many reasons, to include cultural, they don't tend to ask too many questions, particularly to their doctors, because, it's sort of a doctor-patient relationship. The doctor's in a position of authority, and whatever he or she says must be correct.
Yes.
And therefore, we don't tend to, I would say, Māori Pacifica. And I think New Zealanders in general, who just think, oh, well, we trust what the doctor's going to tell us.
Yes.
And I think for my mother, she didn't know what further questions she could ask, because she probably didn't even know what bowel cancer was. I would probably say that. I mean, when my mother was diagnosed, we did not know what bowel cancer was, and it just really surprised us, because we had never been directly affected by someone who had stage 4 cancer. Mm. So one of the things that we need to do as Pacifica and Māori in particular, because what we're seeing statistically is that Māori and Pacifica patients are more likely to present at an emergency level stage where they're diagnosed at stage 4. And then that just opens up a whole different kettle of fish, is that we just need to now understand, and through Bowel Cancer New Zealand, it's just raising that awareness and educating New Zealanders.
Mm.
And in particular, Māori Pacifica, which we have a real key desire to really put a lot more effort in, because the numbers are not good for these vulnerable communities.
Mm.
It's just educating them and just having them understand. From a cultural perspective, Pacifica people do not talk about those certain body parts, because it's considered taboo. Not very appropriate to have that sort of conversation, even with your parents.
Yes.
Even with your father and I think only children, young people, can actually have those conversations with their parents and really encourage them to look after themselves. I think I recently spoke at a company where the workforce was predominantly male, predominantly Māori and New Zealanders in general, And they just have no idea. And again, people just don't talk about the C word, which is cancer.
No.
And if you're diagnosed with cancer, all of a sudden it becomes a topic that no one needs to know. they don't want to talk about it because somehow there's this negative sense that I've done something wrong.
Yes.
Or, and again, that's for whatever reason. It could be to do with cultural or from a faith-based perspective.
Mm.
But actually, it's all a lie in the sense that it's inappropriate information that's been given to our community. So that needs to change. And I believe with New Zealand Bowel Cancer and the many organisations that we work with, we're trying to shift that thinking and change that thinking where it's okay to talk about our various body parts and also talk about bowel cancer and its impact on our communities and our families.
You made a really interesting point there, and I just wanted to sort of go back to it because I had a conversation through work a few months ago with a Samoan guy who his wife's mother actually passed from bowel cancer, and he mentioned that same stuff where there was almost like a shame involved with it of, you know, what have you guys done to create this or cause this. Was that something that your family went through? Was there, did you feel supported by the community? What was the experience?
The experience of my mother, she was diagnosed in January 2013, and 6 months later my mother passed.
Mm.
So it was a very quick
yes. Process.
The shock, and then we needed to accept that quite potentially she wouldn't be with us within 6 months, and so it was very quick. And did we have support? I think we did have support from the family, but I think for us, as an immediate reaction, was that we just came in to ourselves as a family to support my mother and to support each other, and we're a very faithful family, and so we put a lot of time into our faith and actually really praying for healing for my mother and for our family, but also really praying for peace and for strength. Sort of somewhat surpasses all understanding support in order for us to comprehend and understand what we were going through. My brother and sister and I, we had young children.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were a young family raising our young babies. So it was very much, you know, when I look back now, 6 months seemed really quick, but actually it was enough time for, I believe, my brother and sister and I and my father to prepare, and also for my mother too. So, no, we were well supported by our communities, by our churches, by our friends, by our families. But again, it wasn't until much later that I came to recognise and understand that many of the people many of the circles I moved in, people were just not aware. You know, these were people who were old, young, intelligent, you know, just people who just had no idea about bowel cancer. And the question was, did your mother know? How did your mother not know? And how did the doctors not know?
Yeah.
Therefore, those are the questions you hear and you want to figure out, well, how did we not know? Why didn't we know? So that's how I sort of decided to, you know, to join Bowel Cancer New Zealand, to look to make a difference. And maybe this is in response to my mother passing. You know, she was too young to pass away. She was only 63.
Yes.
She would still be alive today if it was detected earlier. They say that if she had it at stage 4 at the age of 63, it's very likely there would have been detection in her body system, potentially in her late 50s.
Mm. Wow, really? Yeah.
Yeah, like 57, 58, which, you know, would have been, you know, that's what they were saying.
Yeah.
So it's so preventable that, so now that I know that it's so preventable, it's like people just need to know, people just need to ask the questions. We're seeing statistics and research that's coming out indicating that Māori and Pacifica you know, they have a higher risk of death from bowel cancer as compared to non-Māori, non-Pacifica. The stats are there, the evidence is there. Therefore, how do we go about reducing those adverse statistics for Māori and Pacifica? But how do we go about reducing those statistics for New Zealanders as a whole? Because it's such a deadly disease that it's the second highest killing cancer in New Zealand that we just need to do more. So, and the government needs to do more. For me, my encouragement for my own family is that we exercise more.
Yeah.
We, you know, I've become a bit more of a bit more intentional about just even talking to my sons, like just them knowing their body and if they have any concerns about their body and particularly their bowel movements. We've cut down on eating red meat, even though red meat is there's no evidence to indicate that it's a major contributor, but we just really watch what we eat. We just exercise well. And what I do now with in regards to my family is that because my brother and sister and I are somewhat predisposed to bowel cancer as a result of both our parents, we do have regular checkups. So we do have colonoscopies on a regular every five years just to check. And and so just far more aware about how to look after my father, who's currently 67.
Yes.
And he's recovered from bowel cancer, so we look after his well-being and ensure that he's eating well, exercising well. But it's not just physical, it's also spiritual. I don't know what it is why we're predisposed to these health challenges. But I just sense that the fact that the evidence is there, and therefore we should just work towards ensuring that more of our communities know and truly understand that, you know, I think there's a 95% chance that you will survive if it's detected early. So that's a good outcome.
Which is kind of the experience you had with your father. I was really blown away that, you know, having one parent go through cancer is, you know, is challenging enough, but then to have your father go through it too. Talk to me a little bit about how you got him to go and have a check.
So he was sort of addressing, being male, his areas of prostate cancer. You know, like, he didn't have it, but it was just, he was doing the whole...
The checks,
getting checks and everything. The one clear evidence to me was that he was actually bleeding. How would I say that? From his bottom.
Yes.
And so, but we thought, okay, that's just probably just following, he had a very minor surgery as a result, and, you know, that's all good. But then 2 weeks later, he was still. And then I thought, oh, but because I knew, I thought, no, that is not good. But I tell you, he didn't listen to me immediately. because he just, and I don't know whether it's because he thought, no, it's better that I don't know. But I, you know, and I keep persuading, and then I just said, no, that's it, Dad. All you need to do is go and have a colonoscopy. It'll tell you yay or nay. So we, I left him to make arrangements with, for that to happen, and I saw that he didn't. So I actually made the arrangement for him. So he did it, I believe he did it more out of, you know, if I don't do this, my daughter won't, you know, leave me alone.
Yeah.
But he did it. But I believe he didn't want to do it because he was somewhat fearful.
Yes.
Of what the outcome would be, because of course his last experience was my mother had a colonoscopy and the outcome was the news that we received.
Yeah.
And so he went and had I went with him and he went to have his colonoscopy and I sat with him and then we were given the news that they did detect something and it wasn't, you know, and they did detect he was actually but it wasn't as advanced as my mother's. And it was again, you know, once again you hear that word.
Yes.
From the medical advice, and all of a sudden, it just seems like this dark cloud comes over.
Yes,
because all of a sudden, it feels like, oh, that's it. My days are numbered.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I sat there and I really felt like that's fine. We've found it. We've sort of detected that there's something's wrong with my father. We've found it early. There are things that we can do to address his. I think he was at stage, the early stage 3 of bowel cancer, early
yeah.
T3. So, but I just really felt I came away from that meeting, you know, I was very positive, and I said to my father, you're going to be fine. And he was very, obviously, quite worried. But again, based on my experience that I'd gone through with my mother, I believe you learn to become, you know, you learn to respond more with hope.
Yes.
Positivity. Because I tell you one thing, as I said to my father, it's interesting how the medical staff, and no disrespect to, you know, the staff, medical staff, but the way they said it was like the ambience, the tone, the delivery. It was like, you know, sorry, you're on your way out. I just looked at it and I thought, okay, that's fine. Thank you for telling us.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get on to this. And we just did, and it was very much our whole approach to addressing my father's diagnosis of bowel cancer was very different to that of my mother's.
Yes.
It's like we went in more with a spirit of hope. We can fight this. We're really blessed that we sounded early.
Mm.
So therefore, you know, and my father's whole dietary lifestyle had changed very quickly.
Yes.
And yeah, and so it was a season for us. And you're right, we did sit back thinking, wow, how is it that, you know, it's affected both of our parents?
Yeah.
And you know, and if I did not know, we may have missed it.
Yes.
So if I was not aware of what the symptoms were and what we needed to do, we would have missed it, and then we would have I would be sitting here talking to you about possibly both my father and mother.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's an example of what can be done if detected early again, and a change of lifestyle for my father. Just feeling really blessed that we found that early. So
yes. Absolutely. And I like what you said there about state of mind, because I think it's really natural to kind of go through lots of different emotions. And I know for myself, I learned that I had to honour both. I had to allow myself to feel the fear and kind of freak out from time to time. But also, you know, that hope is really, really important, and to be able to kind of, you know, say to yourself, you know, they've called it early, there are interventions, you know, and kind of really have both of those and hold both of those at the same time.
The highest rates of bowel cancer in the world.
Mm.
And I mean, it's the second highest cause of cancer death in New Zealand after lung cancer. So with 3,000 people being diagnosed every year, that's got to somehow make people sort of wake up and go, wow, you know, that's a lot of people, and we're not a huge nation, and so I think we just need to be aware, and not as a community, but also the health practitioners, the medical sector also need to know that too, and not avoid it, and address it, because I think people like yourself who are doing these brilliant podcasts and allowing myself and others to share our stories, it actually does contribute significantly to raising the awareness and education for our people.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And it's been really good being able to talk to you about, you know, what your experience was and the issues at the moment.
It sort of does make me smile that I'm able to continue to speak into an area of concern that's close to my heart, because it affected my family directly. And I'm happy to continue to advocate for our wider community in New Zealand.
Thanks so much for joining me today. You've been listening to The C Word. We air every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. Anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/The C Word. And our show is only possible with the support of our sponsor, CARES Charitable Trust. CARES offers support after a cancer diagnosis. You can check them out at carescharity.org.nz. And if you want more information on bowel cancer, or if you're worried about symptoms, contact your GP or go online and visit bowelcancernz.org.nz.
And we'd love to hear from you. If you have a story to tell, or you want to give us some feedback, or just touch base, email us at cwordpodcast@carescharity.org.nz. See you next time.